Wake up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, glad you can be with us on SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, and a weekend of football it was. So, last week we said, look, here comes the NFL and here comes the backup quarterbacks, right? Eight of the 32 teams were starting quarterbacks that you know were not the starters when training camp began. One of those was Daniel Jones, and we talked a lot about Eli Manning getting benched and Jones making the start. And boy, did he ever have a game. He had two rushing touchdowns. He had two touchdown passes as the Giants rallied from 18 points down to beat Tampa Bay 32-31. But it wasn't without help from Tampa Bay, who for whatever reason decided to back up to try to kick a field goal. No, they backed up to kick a better field goal. Took an intentionally delay of game penalty so their kicker had a better chance of kicking a field goal from back rather than front. I don't understand that logic. Bruce Arians, I don't get it. But that's what happened. But the Giants won the game, and Jones was part of a weekend in which we were evaluating backup quarterbacks, from Kyle Allen in Carolina filling in for Cam Newton to Josh Rosen, who for one half actually had the Dolphins in a pretty good position against the Dallas Cowboys, only in halftime to realize, oh shoot, we were not only supposed to lose this game, we're not even supposed to come close to winning games. But nevertheless, it was a time where backup quarterbacks, some did pretty well, some didn't do all that great. Mason Rudolph in Pittsburgh was serviceable, but pretty average for a team that's really struggling right now. But I think a lot of conversation, of course, is going to be on Daniel Jones because of the story that was surrounding all of that leading into the game against Tampa Bay. I mean, the benching of Eli Manning and the movement of this franchise onto a rookie quarterback that came with so much baggage. If you remember how much people hated this draft pick, and now he's the darling of New York. But this is the league now. The one person, though, that should be getting a lot of credit and a lot of praise is veteran Teddy Bridgewater, who led the Saints to a victory in Seattle, a tough place to play, for a team that's holding on to about 6 weeks with Drew Brees being out. Then that Saints team getting an important road win. If you can go 3-3 with Drew Brees being out, you've held the ship afloat, and they're already almost there. SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio, week 3 of the NFL. Now, closing it out tonight, Bears at Redskins, but boy, we got a lot to talk about from the weekend. Can we start off by patting ourselves on the back, Ron Culver? We called it. The Detroit Lions went on the road and beat the Philadelphia Eagles.
That was easy money. We knew that.
We knew that. Lock that one in.
Well, I mean, was it ever any doubt?
Well, I was a little nervous.
No,
I wanted so
no
badly to. I wanted so badly for this to work because I was so confident last week. I said, "Oh, this is one of those gut feelings that I had, just this gut feeling. I don't know why. I don't know. I didn't have any evidence. I wasn't looking at statistics. I wasn't breaking down trends. I just said, I just think the Lions are going to go on the road and beat Philadelphia this weekend.
Yep, just had that feeling that the Lions were going to remain undefeated.
Yep. Undefeated at 2-0-1. And they did. They held on and beat the Eagles 27-24. Amazing. I have no business making a call like that.
No, I was like taking candy from a baby. Come on.
I know. Come on. I locked that bad boy in. So I have to tell a quick story. So a number of years ago, my brother and I were talking about what gift we could get my father for Christmas. Right? We said, what are we going to get Dad for Christmas this year? My brother came with this idea. He said, "Hey, Dad's a Giants fan. Let's get him tickets to see the Giants play the Eagles." So this is a number of years ago. It was at the at MetLife Stadium. So I said, okay, great. So I pitched in. We bought him tickets. I'm going to give him and my mother these two tickets to go see the Giants. My dad's all excited. He's going to go see the Giants. So, and we literally sent him tickets to the worst game in probably the history of the Giants. They had a big lead against the Eagles. They lost to the Eagles. Not only did they lose to the Eagles, DeSean Jackson like returned punts for touchdowns. It was like this big comeback by Philadelphia. Knocked the Giants out of the playoffs. It was a cold, crappy day, you know, to sit in a football stadium. So, you know, it wasn't our shining moment of gift giving. Yesterday, I should say, well, more in the evening because it was an afternoon, late afternoon game. My father got tickets. He now is retired in Florida, and he got tickets to go see the Giants play Tampa Bay and went to that game yesterday. And I think that's one of the best games in Giant, not Giant history, obviously, but one of the best games in recent memory. I think it's one of the most memorable games. If Daniel Jones turns into be a good star quarterback, this is the debut that I think Giant fans will always remember. It's not against a juggernaut football team, and the defense is still atrocious. God, is it bad? But Daniel Jones played in his first start well enough to make people go, wow, what were we all thinking back in April when the Giants drafted this kid and we ripped the hell out of this football team for it?
No, you know what this is? This is Kristaps Porzingis 2.0.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great, great analogy. Great, great comparison. I
mean, when the Knicks drafted him, we ripped the Knicks every which way we could.
Like, no idea who he was. Yeah, what were you thinking? All these other guys are on the board. Why are you going? You better know what you're doing because we don't know who this kid is. You're right. We don't know who this kid is. You better know what you're doing, Phil Jackson. And next thing you know, he's being called the unicorn.
Yep.
Right? Same thing here. I mean, look, the Giants were ripped because the Giants, their defense really is terrible. And there were so many, you know, defensive players and defensive options that they had, and they went with this quarterback from Duke. Look, no offense to Duke, but listen, on Saturdays, are you watching Duke football out of the ACC?
No.
Right? I mean, are you watching it?
The only time you watch them is if they're playing somebody.
Right. So you better tell me who he is, like Giants. You better explain what kind of player you have. And as The Ringer pointed out today, and I thought this was good detailed analysis of Daniel Jones's performance. So he threw for over 300 yards. He had no interceptions. He had two rushing touchdowns. He had two touchdowns, two passes. Now, one was a catch and run by Evan Engram, but he had a beautiful throw to Sterling Shepard in the corner of the end zone. Beautiful. They went back and reviewed not only like his senior year at Duke, but all of his games at Duke. He started 36 games while he was in Durham for the Duke Blue Devils. He never had a game that was as good as the game he just had in his NFL debut. Statistically, he never had a game for Duke that he had against Tampa Bay for the Giants. That's a remarkable statistic. That's a remarkable occurrence. And the Giants can hold their head, at least right now, that they made the right decision and nah, to all of us who were yelling and screaming at them that they were stupid. God, I mean, so I at least hope for the Giants' sake that this is the start of something big, that he doesn't struggle and struggle and struggle and struggle. And the next thing you know, it's like, well, whatever happened in that game in Tampa Bay when he was so magical?
Yeah, no, we do hope that he does have a pedestrian game, though, because I don't think the Giants can be that lucky.
No, that's true.
They are the Giants.
That's the touchdown run that he had. Ron, we could have walked it in.
Oh, God.
How in the world does Tampa Bay leave much real estate in front of Daniel Jones to the end zone on fourth down?
Thing. They were talking, what was I watching? They were saying, like, you know, when he scored that rushing touchdown, they were like, you know, this is something that Eli Manning couldn't do. And then they saw the run. They're like, well, Eli probably could have scored on that one. But still.
Yeah, still.
You know,
yeah.
Eli was never known to be a runner.
No. God. God.
But,
so.
Yeah, I mean, I think he should have moonwalked. Was like 12 yards, 15 yards.
So now I really can't wait to talk to my father about this. So Daniel Jones scores. Now he did text me yesterday because I asked him how many Giant fans were there. And he says, sea of blue. So they were just loaded with Giant fans. But it's common. It's Florida. And so he says, so I'm wondering, because he knows his team really well. Like, he really is a deep Giants fan. So Daniel Jones scores, and he must be thinking,
first thing I guarantee out of his brain was way too much time left on the clock.
Oh yeah.
For that defense, as lousy as that defense is. And then Bruce Arians, I still don't get this. He takes an intentional delay of game penalty and claims it would be an easier kick backing him up 5 yards. He's not angling the kick. He wasn't like trying to move to another hash, so it was a better angle. Somehow kicking it 5 yards further was going to be easier than... I don't get that. So do you? You kicked.
No.
Does that make any psychological sense?
Like
if you were to kick a 40-yard field goal, much easier at 40 than 35. Oh, God.
No. I can't think of it because, this is just optics. As you move further away from the goalpost, they tend to get a little thinner.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever noticed that.
No, that's I will notice that now.
You know,
that's kind of neat.
You picture it. I mean, it's just normal physics, I guess, or optics that when you're 5 yards closer, the goalposts do appear wider, and the further you move back down the field, the tinier that space gets. So
yeah,
that's
true.
I'm not 100% sure what the logic was behind that.
And so anyway,
except that it was, I guess, a reason.
And then he missed.
Of course.
Of course he missed. You know why he missed? Because we're not going to ruin the magic of Mr. Jones, right?
No.
We're not going to give that performance the caveat of the Giants lost, right? Like he's walked in for a touchdown. But of course, the Buccaneers went down the field, kicked the game-winning field goal, and all is good.
Yeah, you can't have that. That's not the storyline.
No, not the storyline at all. So the Steelers are 0-3 for the first time since 2014. And doesn't look like they're going to be rallying towards the postseason anytime soon. Mason Rudolph was blah.
They ran into that juggernaut team, didn't they?
The San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, never mind.
I'm sorry. Well, they're 3-0.
They are 3-0. I guess we've got to start giving them credit, right?
They gave up, the 49ers didn't look all that awesome. The Steelers had a lead in this game late, and then Jimmy Garoppolo with about a minute and a half remaining or whatever it was. Under a minute. It was under 2 minutes, just over a minute. He threw a touchdown pass, and the Steelers lost. But the 49ers turned the ball over 5 times, and the Steelers can't win a game when a team in the NFL, when you have a team that turns the ball over 5 times, and your offense is like, I don't know what to do with this. What are we doing? I don't know. Let's just figure this out.
It's as if they just wanted to give the ball back.
Yeah, and just here you go. I can't do anything. I mean, Rudolph was through for 175 yards, and James Conner was held to 43. Whatever happened to that? Whatever happened to the magic of Le'Veon Bell Part 2? I'm sorry. We overreact in sports. We do. But there's a long-term picture that we always have to play out.
And that's what we do on Mondays. Perfect for overreaction.
Exactly. When James Conner had such a good year last year, that's what all the Steeler fans were saying. It was just, no, this is
Le'Veon
we don't need Le'Veon
who?
Bell. No, we Le'Veon who? We got James Conner. And I'm a cynical. I get cynical sometimes with my team, and I go, look, let's just see how this plays out longer than a couple of games during a season. I agree. It would be nice if you just plug another guy in and that's less of a headache and all of that. And you just plug another guy in and let him roll. But let's see. Let's see. And there are times where he is fantastic. And then sometimes he gets bottled up, on 13 carries for 43 yards. That's not exactly fantasy football numbers. So we got a lot more to get to as we continue our look at week 3 in the National Football League. We'll also get to some college as well from the big game in Athens last and Michigan's woes in Ann Arbor. We got a lot to get to. So thanks for joining us. It's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio. One out of four batteries will fail this winter. Get yours tested for free during Superstart Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If it needs to be replaced, O'Reilly has the Superstart battery for you. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. So the Chargers, they lose to Houston. That was a pretty good game.
Eh, not really.
Not for you.
You know what was worse about that loss is that I'm having to look people in the eye today.
That is true. You know, you have that.
I've seen it on Twitter, like, oh, great game. You know, we pulled it out. It sucked.
Yeah, just, I don't need this. God. I didn't get the game. I'm sorry. I did get the game yesterday. And I don't know if I'm going to miss that old little soccer stadium when it's done or not. There is something about it that's like, I don't know. What's the word I'm thinking of when you have something that's just, aw, cute? Is that too light of a word?
No, it's cute.
Can I find a better description for a soccer/football stadium than cute?
Basically, what you're saying is you want to go up to that stadium and pinch it on the cheeks.
Okay, that's a grab. Pretty much cute will have to suffice then. It's cute.
The only saving grace yesterday is they had a home game.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
There was actually more Charger fans in the crowd than Texans.
I did see that. Now the funny part to me was. You would shoot. They would have these angles from the field, these shots from the field, and you're so used to seeing these grand stadiums, and it's just this half stadium. It's so fun to watch. Like, oh, it doesn't go another level than that. Oh, that roof is where it ends.
Yeah, that's it.
That's all there is. There's no suite slash second level of upper deck fans.
This is it. I'm watching the Texas A&M game this weekend. That stadium holds 102,000 people.
And they're all there.
And they're all there.
Screaming their heads off.
There's not a seat missing. And then you look at the Chargers game, it's like, you know what? It would almost take four of these to fill that one.
Completely.
That's terrible.
Did you see the aerial shots on Saturday night of Athens?
Yes.
Sanford Stadium. Unbelievable. It's like 97,000 people there.
And color coordinated.
Oh, God. Crazy.
Everyone knows, like, oh, this section's a red shirt. This one's a white shirt. Yep. Just keep going around.
Yeah,
I'm looking at the Chargers game like, all right, you guys can fit all in section A.
Oh, this is like family and friends.
Of Athens.
It's crazy.
God.
And it's just, I don't know. I know it's the last year of it.
Yes, have fun in the new stadium.
It's supposed to be brilliant.
We need the AFC Championship game to be held there.
Yeah, I know. Completely. I know.
I don't care how they do it. They should just, you know, just say, you know what, we're just going to do it.
And here's, as a thank you to the
LA Galaxy.
And here's the thing. When they do the AFC Championship game at StubHub, is that still called StubHub
or
is it a new name?
It's a new name?
Okay.
Yeah, who cares? StubHub.
I didn't care either. Spiro Dedis was trying to tell me. I was like, oh, shut up. I don't care.
Yeah,
but make sure when the AFC Championship game is played there that the football field is still outlined with soccer marks.
Oh, of course, yes.
Make sure that exists. Do not just clear the field and make a pristine turf with all the new logos and paint. No.
Yeah.
I want to see the box and the goalie box and the lines.
Don't let us forget where they are playing.
Absolutely. Do not take that away from me. I need to see the soccer markings on the field.
Do you remember when the MLS first started?
Yes.
And MLS, most of those teams didn't have stadiums, so they were playing on soccer fields.
Yes, I covered the Rapids at Invesco Field. It was called the Broncos Stadium was called Invesco Field, and I used to cover Rapids games there, yeah.
I mean, they were playing in football stadiums, and you always got that yellowish line, and we were totally fine with that.
Yeah.
Because we knew it was like, all right, you know, they don't have a home yet. You know, I guess we can't put them in a high school stadium. You got to give them some respect. But, you know, this one had a different feel. You could almost feel like, you know, they should have done the football lines in yellow.
That's right. I'll tell you one quick thing. When I was so my radio station that I worked at in Denver, we were the Rapids home, right? So we carried the Rapids games. So I used to do pre and post game show for the Rapids. And I didn't know much about soccer, so I was kind of learning on the fly. And
So we go to a game, and the night before the game was a Broncos preseason game. It was like it was like 2 days before. It was one of those Thursday night preseason games that they had, and it was raining, and it was wet, and it was awful. And the two sidelines for the football game where all the players were standing got torn to shreds. I mean, just torn to pieces. So the Rapids were playing like 2 days later on a Saturday, and it was still raining, and they didn't fix it. And you're a soccer guy, so you'd appreciate this. The two sidelines were so destroyed. I mean, and that's long too. You're talking about, but especially in preseason, you're talking about 90 people or whatever it is before they make the official cuts. So there's all these players on there, and both of them. When we talked to the coaches afterwards, they said, "Yeah, we had to shorten the field. Like we didn't want our players over there, so we shortened the playing distance. The out of bounds are beyond that." But we wanted to keep away from the dirt, the just slippery mud. So we shortened the field on the turf. And I thought, what a weird answer, right? Like, what a weird situation to be in. Another team's game caused you to have a different philosophy of what you were going to do based on the turf settings from a preseason NFL game. They couldn't get to their new stadium fast enough. I mean, they hated sharing that stadium because they would get decent crowds for a soccer team. In a 79-seat football stadium, it looked like nobody was there. You'd go, wow, looks like nobody's here. And they'd come back with attendance. They'd go, yeah, we have 28,000 people here. Yeah,
see, you know what the worst thing about all this is, too, for Charger fans, is that when you're finally moving out of the soccer stadium, you're not going – you don't have a home stadium.
That's right, right.
You know, I mean, thank God the colors are somewhat similar, but if you notice, the Rams are kind of drifting towards blue and white.
Yeah, I know, right.
They're trying to get away from the gold.
I think if you're the Chargers, the one thing you're going to be worried about is playing in a 29, 30, I don't know, how much does it hold, 30? 30,000?
Is that? Yeah. That's roughly. I think it maxes out like a 27, 28.
All right, 27, 28. Let's keep it around there just for simplicity's sake. For fun. Playing in that can mask some of the popularity of your team in the city. When you go to the new stadium, you gotta fill it up.
Yeah, because that one's going to be like at least 70,000, 75,000.
Yeah, you're going to have to figure out a way to get at least 60,000 there.
But you know what? It goes to the thing, too. I'm curious to see if even the Rams fill it up.
That's true.
I mean, I know the first game for both teams is going to be a sellout because everyone's going to be jazzed. Everyone's going to be excited. But, you know, I'm talking... You know, midway through the season, are they still going to be? Is it still going to be at a fever pitch for both of those guys?
True. Right.
I don't know if it will. I mean, it's LA fan.
Well, I'm going to miss that old little stadium. On Twitter, it says, y'all know soccer stadiums around the world are as big, if not dwarf, NFL stadiums.
Oh,
yes, but not here, of course. I don't know what your point is. What we're saying is here, they're about 30 grand. That's it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. In England, they hold 100,000. Awesome.
And we know
here,
this.
No, we know
we
this.
We know this. That
we're okay.
We know that everywhere else in the world, soccer is the most popular sport.
But
we
not
understand
here.
That, but not you, here.
You can't get 100,000 people to go to an MLS. Oh, they do get 70 something in Atlanta though. Atlanta does really well. That Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Free food.
Yeah, that might be it. Might be it. But now they're building a soccer stadium here in Nashville. It's going to be about 30,000. But I'm going to miss it.
30,000.
30,000. That's about it. That's about right. I just am going to miss it next year when the Chargers move to the big stadium because I think it's cute. All right? I think it's cute. So
it is. You just want to go pinch it on the cheeks.
I'm just like, my curiosity about it is from a broadcast standpoint. Now, the game doesn't look any different when CBS does the game, when they're shooting the game.
No.
It doesn't look any different. Like, it doesn't look like it's, all right, well, this stadium gives us different angles that we have to shoot from, so this looks like this. But I wonder just technically, in order to get that, is that a problem for CBS?
Well, might be limited on different angles.
right. When they get there, do they go, well, it's much easier when we go to Foxborough to shoot a game than here.
Of course.
We still can give you the same thing, but...
We have to pack all the wide lenses.
Right.
Exactly. When do they start just bringing out the fisheye lens so they can show the whole field?
I know. So, well... AFC Championship game hopes for that stadium are still alive despite a 1-2 start.
No, it's dead. It's over.
The undefeated teams in the National Football League includes one in particular. How good are they? We'll continue our look at Week 3 next, SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, as we get going on week three for a busy, busy weekend in the NFL and in college. Real quick on the college game, I settled in to watch Georgia-Notre Dame. Glad I did. That ended up being a really fun game to watch.
It did.
Really good game. Notre Dame came to play, and I got to be honest with you, I don't have a lot of respect for the Fighting Irish. I feel like they're one of those teams that teases, and then when push comes to shove, like the playoff or whatnot, they just go, nah, sorry, we wasted your time all season. But they're a good team, and they played really well. I mean, you can only do so much when you're on the road at Georgia. And the Bulldogs hadn't been tested all year, been playing some kind of patsies, opened up the year with Vanderbilt, shut out Arkansas State. I think they played either Murray State or Kent State, one of those teams, on their schedule. So this was their first real test, and that ended up being a really good game. That towards the end, Ian Book had a chance. That's all you want is a chance to win it, and he had it, but they couldn't get it done. Obviously, the conversation in a football game like that is, okay, you get these top 10 matchups. The playoff is a little different now. You can afford to lose a game. Is this really a playoff in September? Or do these, you know, can these teams make it so that after they lose, can they still be considered for the postseason, depending on how things shake out? And I think both of them are, obviously. In Georgia's case, win the SEC, you're in. I mean, I don't care. If they had lost Saturday, win the SEC, you're in. You're good. But for Notre Dame, if Notre Dame runs the table, goes 11-1, they don't play a conference schedule. Hudson Mason and I were talking about this on Friday. That's a difficult position for them to be in, because when everybody else is playing a conference game, championship, I should say, and you're not, and we sort of can weed out those winners of those conference championships, and you've been idle, it's hard unless you have a resume that's super strong. That's going to carry the day, meaning you're off. Everybody else is playing. Everybody else has a chance to look really good, and you kick it in. Like, let's say Georgia and Alabama, right, play against each other for the SEC title, and it's a close game, and it's really good. How does a Notre Dame loss to Georgia fit in the picture if both of those teams emerge from the SEC championship game and Georgia loses, let's say? You're not going to crack that. But if Georgia wins and other teams are stumbling and don't look all that great and there's a surprising loss here and there, they're back into it. They're back into the conversation. I think they impressed a lot of people with their ability to go to Athens and stay in that game. So anyway, that was a really fun game to watch, but I have a confession to make, and we'll get back to the NFL in a minute. I have a confession to make. I'm a big Pac-12 After Dark person. It's one of the things I enjoy about college football. My wife and kids usually go to bed early. My son is older now, so he doesn't really. And then I usually settle in where nobody's bothering me and I can watch football and do some things on the computer and do some research for the show and all that.
I know what it is. There's no interruptions.
No interruptions.
The only time you miss something is because you chose to.
Right. So, but Saturday night I was kind of feeling tired, and I was like, we had a long day. We're kind of painting and doing stuff around the house. And I said, all right, I'm a little tired. I'm going to bed early. I totally missed UCLA and Washington State.
Yeah, you did. You did.
I woke up, so I saw that and I went, wait a minute. I gave up on that game. And I said, because I think UCLA is crap.
Oh, they are.
Right? I just think they're crap.
You are 100% right.
And when they were down, what, 18? No, 32. Well, I didn't catch it at 32. I gave up before that. I think they were down 20-something when I said, nah, I'm not staying up for this. I'm going to go to bed. And I woke up and I went, oh, my God. And I'm looking up on Twitter. I wake up, I look on Twitter, and it's just loaded with people going, oh, my God, tune into this game. If you're up, get to your televisions and watch this incredible game. This is the most incredible thing I've ever seen. How in the world did UCLA come from behind? Mike Leach should be fired immediately for this.
Spent too much time comparing mascots.
Exactly. Stop comparing mascots and pontificating on aliens and whatever else he's doing. Like, actually prepare to have to keep a 32-point lead in the second half of a football game. I gave up on it, and I wish I didn't, because, man, oh, man.
No, the truth is, I was up. I was watching that game. Fell asleep.
Yeah.
Because, that first half was dreadful.
Dreadful!
I mean, it was predictable. Neither team really played that well, but, I mean, UCLA played exceptionally bad. So you kind of knew that, okay, this is how it's going to go. And I was in the same position as you. It's like, why do I want to stay up and watch the second half? We'll just watch, Washington State pile it on some more.
That's my thought, right?
Because the highlight to that point was seeing Gardner Minshew on the sidelines.
Yeah, it was the only thing. That was the only thing that was worth it.
Wearing short jorts.
And so I go to bed and I wake up and I miss one of the craziest college football games in a long time.
They
score
like 60 points in one quarter or something. Oh, stupid. I don't know.
God,
I still can't do the math.
It's like your worst nightmare coming. Like, and Washington State was ranked. Right, so you go into that game, and you're watching that. You're a Washington State fan, Cougars fan. Here comes Gardner Minshew. You're like thrilled. You're killing UCLA. You're just like, yeah, taking them down. Yeah, this is great. All of those things, and then you watch slowly as it starts to erode, and UCLA scores 50 points in the second half. And what was the touchdown? Between the two, 14 touchdowns were thrown in the game.
Yeah.
There was 16 overall in the game.
Well, I don't even know who the quarterback is for Washington. I think he threw 9.
Something
ridiculous.
Just insane. Yeah, Anthony Gordon, 9 touchdowns. And it was, and I missed it because I was lazy. And I wanted to go to sleep on a busy Saturday.
But
I gave up on the Bruins because up until that game, the Bruins have done nothing. Absolutely nothing. And I don't think you should beat Oklahoma. I don't think you're as good as Oklahoma. But they didn't even show up for that game. They lost on the road to Cincinnati to open up the season. I watched that game and wasn't impressed. Right, they lost to San Diego State. They got throttled by Oklahoma, which is fine to get beat by Oklahoma, but show some fight at home, for crying out loud. Fans, they're giving away tickets because nobody wants to go. They're a terrible team, and I'm watching them get destroyed by a ranked opponent, and I had every right to go to sleep. And I wish I didn't because it was, like I said, it was a great game. So, I don't think it was a great game, but it was from a technical standpoint, it was just a wild finish.
Now, how do you feel about your... Was it 2017? Was it 2017 national champ? 2018? 2017 national champions.
The 2017 national champions?
Yes.
UCF. Oh, UCF. Yes. I'm sorry. Yes. I'm sorry. Wow, that ended quickly, right? Like all of a sudden, that's it. We're done with them. No more conversation.
What was funny about that play, the final
pit
play? The pit special where the quarterback just... kind of, was arguing with the positioning of his wide receiver or something like that. At least that's what we were led to believe.
Right.
I had watched The Longest Yard, the Adam Sandler version of The Longest Yard.
Nice.
Earlier that day. I just caught the tail end of it. And I'm like, we're getting ready to leave somewhere. I'll just turn it on just to watch that final play where he's yelling at the receivers, grabbing them by the face mask, trying to put them in different spots. And then he slowly starts to walk over, and that's when they snapped the ball to Michael Irvin's character.
Right.
And did that, and... that's how the play was. I'm watching that pit game. I'm like, dude, they just took this straight out of the movie.
Yeah. that's good. Yeah,
because
good way to
they
look
did
at
the
it.
Same exact thing. The quarterback's over there yelling at a receiver. He's off by the tight end. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at it like, he's going to snap the ball.
Yep.
Like, I don't know why UCF isn't seeing this right now, that the guy's going to snap the ball to, I think it was the running back.
Yeah, A.J. Davis was the running back that caught the ball.
Then he tosses it over to the receiver, and the receiver throws a perfect ball to a wide open quarterback.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know any of your names, UCF and Pitt. And
that's
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. That's okay.
Guys got your win of the season, knocking off the national champions.
Yeah, and it's too bad too, because UCF does not get the benefit of a loss, right? They don't get it at all. Now it's like, oh, thank God we don't have to have this debate this season.
But that's the positive out of it. That we're not gonna have to sit there all season long, like, well, where should we put UCF? Where should UCF fit in the college playoff? If we had six teams, they would be one of the six teams, right? We're done with that conversation now. And I'm kind of glad about it.
And Pitt wasn't a ranked team, but they're still an ACC team. And if UCF had gone up there and destroyed them like they destroyed Stanford, all of a sudden now we're going to be like, okay, yeah, what are we going to do with this?
Do we slide them into the top 10?
How do we accommodate this team who keeps winning regular season games every... They had won 27 straight regular season games.
Yeah, I'll give it to them. I mean, they are... that is a good football team.
They're really good. They are really good. And it is unfortunate that we kind of... We go, okay, you're done. And it is sad because, like, look... It's not their I shouldn't say it's not their fault they play in the AAC. I mean, they chose to be a part of that conference, so, you know, whatever. But for whatever reason, because of that existence, for some reason, we look at their team and their players differently than we look at other teams. And then we shouldn't do that. They're recruiting from the same talent pool, right? I mean, they might still, despite this loss, they might still be the best team in the state of Florida.
Yeah.
Right? And yet
they probably are.
Yeah.
How sad is that?
That is sad.
I mean, when you really think about the schools in Florida, they probably are the best team in Florida.
Yeah, they might be. I mean, Florida is still a flawed team despite their high rankings.
I'm
still
say
a flawed
this.
Team.
They're probably the best football team in Florida, college and professional.
They might be. They might be, right? So the reality is because of the loss, it makes us go, ah, okay, cool. Now we don't have to worry. Like, whereas, you know, hey, look, it's a road loss. It stinks that you had to suffer it, but you lost by 1 point on the road to a pretty good Pitt team, not a great superior Pitt team, but they're not crap, right? And now America goes, okay, we don't have to deal with you anymore. Whereas, you know, in other worlds, that wouldn't be the case. And for other teams, that wouldn't be the case. But that's what it is. If you're in a non-Power 5 conference, Boise State dealt with this every single year. Every year. They'd go on the road. They'd play Georgia. They'd beat Georgia in Atlanta. But then Nevada, some crazy night, a Nevada kicker would kick a field goal, and that'd be it for Boise State. No, you wouldn't have to talk about them anymore. And that's just the way it was. Other teams always got the benefit of the doubt, but not these teams, not these schools. You lose, and that's it. And they know it. They knew it, too. They knew it at the end. That was it. No more. So, all right, we'll get back to the NFL as we cruise along this morning. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, you can do so at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's, and me at Tony D Radio. We'd love to hear your thoughts on week 3 and in week 4 in college as well as we continue on a Monday SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Boy, we got a lot to digest. I said, again, college is now getting more and more interesting. Good matchups there. Also, week 3 of the NFL with backup quarterbacks galore. This hour of SB Nation Radio presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I think with the backup quarterback situation, and we said this last week, there were eight teams that went into the game with quarterbacks that they did not think they were going to be using at the beginning of the camp, right? I mean, 8. And some were good. Teddy Bridgewater was good. Saints won on the road. There were some average play by some people. Mason Rudolph wasn't terrible, but he wasn't great either. And there was some surprisingly good ones. Kyle Allen threw 4 touchdowns.
Yeah.
The Carolina Panthers. He looked fantastic in their win against Arizona. He looked really good.
I know it was against Arizona, but it's one of those things where I felt they got more production out of their quarterback than they have in a long time.
Yeah.
And
right.
I really, seriously, I know Cam Newton's job's not in jeopardy, but if he comes back and sucks, do you start looking at it like, you know what, maybe?
Well, this is the concern, right? You have to be... Cam Newton's problems have always been sort of injury-related from the standpoint of always something nagging him, right? It's the last year it was the shoulder that was just... They were playing so good and winning so many games, and then all of a sudden, they're not a good football team anymore. And it's because the shoulder injury, and he was fighting through that and did not look good doing it and all of those things. So whether it's the shoulder or the foot or whatever it is that is nagging him, he's got to be, in order for people, if this kid progresses and plays well, they start winning and winning a lot, he's got to be 100% healthy, because if he goes in there at 80%, he's not better at 80% than this kid could be if he continues to play like this. And that's the key, right? We always talk about that with starters. What percentage of your starter is still better than 100% of your backup? right? In some places, some teams, it's like 60% of my starter is still better than the guy I've never heard of who's backing him up. I mean, look at Jarrett Stidham, the former Auburn quarterback. I like Jarrett Stidham going to the pro, but he threw a pick six the second he got in the game for the Patriots. That was too bad. So I like Jarrett Stidham. I thought he was, you know, but I'm not going to fault him for that, saying he's a terrible NFL quarterback. It was his first game, right? I mean, my God. I mean, every guy in the league could tell you, I had my welcome to the NFL moment. That's yours, kid. He might end up still being a solid backup for the Patriots at some point, maybe even eventually a starter in the next few years if Brady moves on. But it's nice and refreshing to see a guy like Kyle Allen go in and play really well, play great. Daniel Jones, the same thing as I mentioned, to have a game like he had against the Buccaneers that was not equated to any type of success that he had at Duke. He had good games at Duke, but he didn't have a good game like that against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's refreshing. And then there's other guys who were in positions to do some cool things. Josh Rosen played, they were competitive with the Cowboys until Dallas came out of the locker room and went, yeah, it's enough. We're done with this. Let's wrap this up. But like I said, eight of them started yesterday. It's not a good trend for the league when you're not providing a list of these great quarterbacks to just dive into. Most of us are going to Google really quick.